We talked earlier in the program about battery-operated lawn tools. When we were at the National Hardware Show, we had a great opportunity to visit with Briggs & Stratton and their line. And it's this 72 or 82-volt battery that operates four different units. It operates a lawnmower, a chainsaw, a hedge trimmer, and a weed whacker. Walked into A to Z Equipment this week. I saw they had a display out for steel. And when we were talking about that, a gentleman named Jim, who works for MDT, are you familiar with them? I don't know that, that one either. But he wants to see about sending us the Troy Built has a lithium battery power line now, too, that they're going to have us do a product test on. So and I think I like just not having to mess with the constantly having to keep the gas fresh and your two-stroke
Or if you like electric, having a cord, you're dragging a cord around all over the place. And you know what, cords, they get tangled and knotted and caught on stuff. And, you know, you're limited as to where you can go with it. And there's a lot of upside to it. Plus, they're a lot quieter. You're not putting out air, you know, air pollution and all the other things that are associated with that. So I think it's if they can get the technology where those batteries aren't so heavy and they last long enough and obviously have a the ability to be recharged a lot of times, I think it's a pretty smart way to go.
Well, I didn't use it, but playing with it in the booth, the way they weighted the battery with the lawn of the Briggs & Stratton was just about a perfect balance on the weed whacker.
It was nicely balanced, yeah.
But, again, I haven't gone into practical use application. Yeah. Let's get to Tina.
You need to just go buy one so we can find out.
Yeah, I know. They're not that much. I'd say it's $400 for the mower and the battery. And then after that, it's only about $200 for every product after that. So over a six-month period of time, it's not.
I think Bermuda grass would be a good test for that mower. It would be interesting to see if it's got enough oomph to
get the Bermuda.
To get through Bermuda. But, yeah, if it can, well, that'd be awesome.
Tina and Gilbert, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm having a problem with a queen palm. It's about 10 feet tall, and the fronds are yellow. There's one frond that's a little bit green, but the others are still yellow. And I really don't know what type of fertilizer to use or
what to do. you and just about everybody else that has a queen palm has or will have a problem with them. You know, they're just not that well suited to here. They need lots of water, and you want to fertilize it with a palm tree type food, and manganese in particular is the trace element that we want to make sure they're heaviest in.
Okay.
Not magnesium, manganese.
Manganese. Okay.
Okay, manganese.
Okay.
And that should be in a palm food, or you can buy manganese by itself. The other thing you'll want to do is maybe add some gypsum or some soil sulfur or a product called alkalichi. Anything you can do to kind of buffer the salty alkaline soils. They don't like that too well, and they don't like hot, dry heat. Unfortunately, you end up spending a lot of money to try and turn it around. You could probably go buy a better suited palm.
What would you suggest?
Well, Canary Island date palm is a great one. Kind of the similar height. It gets a much fatter trunk. It spreads out more. Mediterranean fan palm's another really good one. There's a palm they've had really good success with. It looks probably about as close as you can get to a queen palm called a mule palm, like a pack mule palm.
Yeah,
that would be a good one.
Okay.
I know Treeland has kind of been working and trying to develop a lot of those, so mule palm might be something to check into.
Yeah, well, I appreciate all the information that you give us through Rosie on the House. I love you guys, and I listen to you every Saturday, and you've been a big help.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can squeeze Sally in just before we wrap up this hour. Wants to talk about snails in her landscape. Good morning,
yes.
Sally.
Hello.
Yes,
hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah. little glitch here. How are you doing, Sally?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Good.
I've got these little snails. They look like an ice cream cone, little bitty thing.
Uh-huh, sure.
And they're just, you know, rampant in this flower bed.
Okay.
Killed all the plants that were in the front. As I pulled the plants up, they're just all together underneath there. What do I do to kill them without having to put a bunch of chemical stuff?
Well, you know, there's a couple things you can do. Some people will put a pie tin full of beer out there, and that'll attract them. And, of course, then they fall in the beer and get marinated. Then you can throw them in the skillet. No, a little garlic and butter, and there you go. But a little pie tin full of beer will get out there. Other than that, there are some pretty good snail. A diatomaceous earth would be a good way to go if you want something totally non-toxic. Scatter it around as they crawl through it. It slices them up, and they dehydrate and dry out and die.
Mr. Jay Harper of Farm's Choice, we appreciate your time in with us this Saturday.
Always a pleasure. Had fun.
Next Saturday, during the Outdoor Living Hour, I'll be live at the Phoenix Baptist Church for the Great American Seat-Up. You can get tickets at rosieonthehouse.com. I believe it's buy one, get one free for the Friday-Saturday event. Coming up next, it's Open Line Hour. If you've got a question about your house, home, castle, or cabin, jump on the line, 1-888-767-4348.